Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again, and we're going to be continuing on boundaries and ancestors and reincarnation and all that kind of thing. And when I was young, there was a story about my ancestry. And my grandfather was illegitimate, had no birth certificate. His mother was the chambermaid for the Duke of Grafton. He spent some time in an orphanage. He was bought a commission in the cavalry in the First World War, and nobody ever really knew where he came from. But the rumour was, and my aunt investigated it, and she actually talked to some of the Grafton family, that he was the eldest illegitimate son of the Duke of Grafton. And my mother believed that and raised us
accordingly.
Her way of doing it often involved an awful lot of "no dear, that's common." But we were raised with huge privilege, if you like, though there was the bitterness in it because he was illegitimate and didn't get all that kind of stuff. Well, many years later, my mother got involved in an ancestry type course through her church, and she suddenly rang me up out of the blue and said, "Oh, I found Daddy's father." And he was something completely normal or ordinary, because nowadays they'd been able to find it. And she said, "I never believed all that rubbish you made up about that." But anyway, the point of that was, it probably isn't true that we're descended from the royal family, as it were. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting doing the research on it, because I was interested. So I went back and said, "Who are the Dukes of Grafton?" And they're from the Dukes of Somerset, who are brothers in ancestry to the Dukes of Marlborough. So, and they came from the children of Barbara Villiers, Duchess of Cleveland and Countess of Castlemaine, who was the mistress of Charles II, mm-hmm. which basically means ancestral line straight back to the Stuart royal family, and then back to Mary, Queen of Scots, and back beyond that. And even if it's not true, and it probably isn't true, it was given to us still to work with. Mm-hmm. And I followed the British royal family back with great interest around that line. And back from Mary Stuart, you can go back to Edward I, who did, and I referenced this last time in a throwaway line, expel the Jews from England.
Right. I did wonder what you meant by that.
Yes. So that was a personal comment that came out of it. And many years after that, when I was at a Kabbalah group, I met a guy, very, very powerful man from America. Not a very nice man, I have to say. And he was going on about the Jews being expelled in many places, which they have been. And I said, "I would like to apologise to you for that, because I have ancestry that may have been involved." And I put my hand on my heart and say, "I am so sorry." And it felt like an important and powerful thing to do. He absolutely hated me from that moment onwards and did everything he possibly could to cross me, which was also very interesting. But I would never have taken on the responsibility of apologising on behalf of the King of England if I hadn't had that illusion that he was my ancestor. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at that moment it felt like it was mine to do, even if it's not true. Probably something had come through that meant that I could make that apology.
Yeah. And that you will have changed something of what was in the field. You will have done. Because your apology kind of on behalf of that line, whether it's your direct blood or not, is still working in the ancestral field of his family.
Yes.
Whatever he made of it.
Yes.
Whatever he made of it's kind of beside the point as well.
Yes, it kind of is. So it's just one of those amazing quantum weird woo-woo wanky bollocks moments in one's life, but you know you had to do it.
Yeah. So as ever, the card that I picked just before we went on, which is after Maggie, dear reader, listener, whatever you are, sorry, had...
You'll have a hard time reading this. Yeah. Yes.
She'd already said, oh, can we carry on with this discussion? And yeah. I went, oh, yes, but I have to pick a tarot card. And the tarot card is so perfect for the ongoing discussion. So it comes from the Wildwood Tarot, which is illustrated by the incomparable Will Worthington, as are 9/10 of the tarot decks in the world, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
His art is just beautiful and very in alignment with what Shouldn't I think is beautiful and magical. So hang on, I'm trying to put it on the screen.
Oh, yes, that's the hermit, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely.
That's not the one I picked, but that's the front of the book. Yeah, I really love his art. Anyway, and the wiseness in here is John Matthews with Mark Ryan. And I must say, before the Witch's Wisdom Tarot came out, which is Danielle, my lovely friend and student, Danielle Barlow with Phyllis Curott, the American Witch, that's probably now my favourite tarot. I do love it. I love Danielle's art, and I think the book's really wise. But up until then, this was
the one.
My totally favourite tarot. There are many other Oracle decks that I love for various reasons, especially the ones created by my friends, obviously enough. But this is so cool. The pictures are beautiful, and the book is really wise. Anyway, so I picked the Ten of Arrows. And it is a really lovely, simple picture of a man. He's teaching his son how to shoot with a bow and arrow.
Oh,
he's,
yes.
You know, he's holding the child's elbow up so that the arrow
Would you goes send me a picture
straight.
Of that so I can post it? Yeah, so would that be the equivalent of swords in the traditional tarot, do you think? Arrows?
Yeah.
Air.
Yeah. So... I'm going to read you the whole of the meaning thing as written by John Matthews and Mark Ryan, because I think this is a thing I have a particular bee in my bonnet about, and I hope it's a place that we can go if we're going to talk about the ancestors. So its meaning in inverted commas is a parent passes on skills, wisdom and ancestral ways with love and tolerance. Instruction and communication are required between the generations to help use old skills in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it then goes on with what it calls reasoning points. As our young people absorb and apply even ever more complex technologies with bewildering speed and uncanny ease, the gap between the generations appears to get wider every year. When we interact with the young today, we must make a conscious effort to pass on traditional wisdom and skills and make the relationship with those disciplines as vital as ever. With the coming of the Industrial Revolution, the traditional relationship between father and son broke down. Shared bonding experiences like hunting, fishing, the tending of herds and fields were slowly eroded. Also, for girls, the women's mysteries have faded as traditional societal roles have evolved and changed, and personal instructional relationships, even among women across the age gap, grow rarer. All generations lose out if the divide becomes too wide and skills, wisdom, and arts are lost. Just as no child will ever forget the first fist he catches or the first touchdown she scores, coached and encouraged by grandpa, the pride in achievement and responsibility present in good parenting is anchored in the gift of instruction. We lose these gifts of shared experience and patience taught through the interaction of instruction at society's peril.
Yes.
And I feel passionately about this.
Yes.
Particularly as it relates, actually, to the physical skills that are essential for a life wherein you understand in the material world how utterly dependent upon the earth you are.
Yeah.
And so skills like my particular ones are spinning, weaving, knitting, crocheting, cooking, gardening. You know, those things that are too many people are so distanced from. And if you get out a wooden bowl, or bowl of anything and a wooden spoon and say, I'm going to make a cake, there are people alive and breathing today who will look at you with perplexed faces, yes, going, what has a bowl and spoon got to do with a cake?
Yeah. And what has a cow got to do with a steak?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's happening more and more.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, this is my call out to you. If you are a person with any skills whatsoever, go and catch yourself a young person and make them learn it.
This is actually what the homeschooling time could be for. I know the difficulty is they've got their quotas, the children have got to do a certain amount of stuff, but most of the children, I gather, are not really doing it. So I think if I would like to think that if I were a parent of a young child now, I would be sitting down with them and doing these essential things like, okay, we're going to plant today.
Today we're going to make five trees.
We're going to look at birds. We're going to name the birds. We're going to make a curry from the beginning, and we're going to give thanks for every ingredient. We're going to think about where that ingredient came from. I've started a little exercise because I do 100 appreciations when I wake up and 100 appreciations when I go to sleep every day, except Sunday. I take Sundays off. Woo. I'm deeply ungrateful on Sundays. Sometimes you have to ring the changes because even though I'm incredibly grateful for my six senses every day, I don't want to have to go through...
Iterate them.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind it usually, but every now and then. And quite often I will think of everything I ate that day and trace it back and give thanks for it. And it's actually lovely, but it makes you realise so clearly where your food is coming from, not only just from the ground, but where in the ground.
Yeah.
And how many people and how many animals brought it to you and what's going on with it. And teaching our children this would be absolutely amazing because I don't know if children in cities even could recognise a bullfinch.
Probably not. Well, I don't know, maybe after the summer's lockdown, maybe more of them could. I hope so. But I'm slightly perturbed, Maggie, bullfinch following straight on from being grateful for my food. I trust you're not eating bullfinches.
Very conscious. I have eaten sparrow in China.
Okay.
One of the things that I noticed when I travelled in China with my father was how little birdsong there was.
Oh, God.
Because they'd eaten them all.
Oh, dear.
But maybe they had to. You just don't know. But we had sparrows turned up at a banquet. Tiny little pathetic things with their heads still on. Oh. And we had a 22-year-old interpreter who was finding me very challenging at the time because I'd beaten him at a competition as a kind of a fun fair with shooting. And I was a better shot than he was, and he didn't forgive me for that. And then later we found another place and he told me the wrong rules so I'd lose, which was very interesting. But the point of that was that he was cracking open the heads and sucking out the brains because he knew I found it repulsive. But I don't know what the relevance of that was. Oh, just the fact that I've eaten sparrow and I've eaten camel and I've eaten snake and I've probably eaten dog. And I've eaten raw horse and all that kind of thing because that's what was there.
Yeah.
That was what was there to eat. But even then, China was aching to be more Western. And even though I knew nothing back in those days, I wasn't even aware that I got what's called healing hands or anything like that, I was really interested in where do you get the sea cucumbers from, the sea slugs? Who catches them? Where do they come from? But they were already, because they were following the West, they were in a deep disconnect. They didn't know.
Wow.
Whereas a couple of times we ate with families out in the countryside, we were permitted to do so. We had security with us or something like that. The families out in the countryside could tell you everything about everything you ate because they'd grown it.
It's really a shame, actually. Not before Brexit at all. So here we go. We're in fucking Brexit, or we've Brexited. And because my attention is not always on the political realm, I almost accidentally got to a place where I was starting to think, oh, it would be amazing to do a year where I only ate things that came from this island. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh my God, no way, that's going to make me look like I'm in some way approving of Brexit, which I most definitely do not. But yeah, I think, I mean, as somebody who loves to forage food and who did partly grow up on a farm. Yeah. I think perhaps, it sounds like such a pompous ass thing to say, I'm more educated than most on where my food comes from, but also maybe I care so much where my food comes from, and what effect does that, does me eating whatever it is I'm eating, what effect does that have on the greater web of life? And so, you know, I'm ruthless. If it comes in a plastic pot, I will not buy it, and therefore I will not eat it. And if I can have one that grew in Devon rather than Lincolnshire, I'll buy the one that came from Devon. And if I can have one that grew in Lincolnshire rather than New Zealand or whatever, I'll have the one that grew in Lincolnshire. And if I can't have one, you know, if it's not the apple season or whatever, I won't buy one. And that's not because I've in any way don't love, respect, etc., etc., the foodstuffs of the rest of the world. It's not that I don't want to be connected in trade or in any other way to the rest of the world. It's just that those choices have a really, really negative impact on our planet and on the capacity of our descendants, whether personal or societal, to have food on their plates, to have air, to have water, to have fresh air, to have clean water.
Yeah.
And that matters
hugely.
So much.
Yes. I bow down to you in admiration because I try. I don't do as well as you, but I do try. And I've changed all my cosmetics now.
Well,
I don't buy anything with plastic in cosmetics. Although sometimes I get from the wonderful woman at Kentadean Aromatics, which is in Tavistock. Look it up online. It's amazing. It begins with a K, Kentadean. Every now and then she sends something in a form of plastic that's made out of starch or something. But I had to query it because I said, are you using plastic? No, no, I'm not. But, you know, it just goes to show that it's possible.
Yeah.
It is possible. And I do try. I don't do as well as you. But it's, of course, people will say it's more expensive. And sometimes it is. But we have got heroes like Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall who've, because of them, the supermarkets now do not charge more for loose apples than they did for
plastic. I had once upon a once, I mean, it is a long time ago now, my kids were little. So when my middlest was very little, months old, at the time when everyone else's baby is getting fatter and plumper and larger, my baby started vomiting, screaming and losing weight.
Oof.
It was terrifying. Yeah. And I thought he was dying. And it turned out that he was profoundly allergic to all animal products. So whether it was meat or dairy or anything, he was horrifyingly allergic to them and they made him vomit. And so he had to have an exclusion diet, basically. And so I think it's from that time that my capacity to be absolutely ruthless comes.
Yes.
But at around a bit later than that time, so obviously, someone with small children, I'm perhaps a little more focused than others on the fact that our species and our planet have what I very much hope is a future. And I remember vividly being in a supermarket, walking down the aisle, observing that to buy the organic one, which is where my heart absolutely was, and my ethics are, was far more even than twice as expensive as the non-organic one sitting on the shelf right next to it. I don't remember what it was. And having this conversation with that disembodied voice that identifies itself as life herself.
Yeah.
And she basically asked me to define what I meant by cost.
Yes.
And that
this
would cost me, not literally, but in the greater scheme of things, it would cost me my children's future or my descendants' future.
Yes. Wow.
And that's always stayed with me. And so, well, you know what we're like. We'll utterly fucking ruthless. And I will eat turnips every bloody day
if necessary
rather than choose things which will take that future from them and will ultimately cost us our earth.
I do find it very difficult sometimes going to my brother's at Christmas time. We didn't have to do it this year, obviously, last year, sorry, because his wife just scrapes all the food scraps into the bin and bones of the turkey into the bin, that kind of thing. My mother, bless her, was always going, God, I want that turkey bone. So in the end, I asked for her, and they used to give her the turkey. She went home and made suppers for
weeks
months.
Of lovely stock.
Yes, I mean, I am so grateful for freezers. The person who invented freezers is, oh, just amazing. Yes, okay, most of my stuff in freezers is in plastic, but it's reused and reused and reused. Some of it's 40 years old, if not older, which is sort of okay, I guess, because it gets reused. But stocks and carcasses and, I mean, if you're a vegetarian, obviously you can't do that. But if you're not a vegetarian, the ability to eat sustainably is so much easier, actually, if you're not a vegetarian in this country. But you are veggie, aren't you? Or no, mostly.
I'm mostly. Not entirely veggie. I'm not kind of ideologically opposed to eating meat.
It just doesn't suit you.
It just doesn't suit me. But I do sometimes eat chicken and I do sometimes eat venison. Venison is part of, to eat venison is part of what's asked of me in my relationship with the deer.
Yeah.
Whose hides I make drums with.
Yeah.
And as part of that conversation, I'm very clear that I will eat what has been treated in both its life and its death with love and respect,
yes,
whether it's a vegetable or a fruit or an animal,
yes,
which is why, one of the many reasons why I will buy organic food or in the main, or literally in the main part, not eat. Oh dear.
Well, yeah, you're a complete inspiration. I mean, you have influenced me hugely since I've known you, and I'm shifting slowly and steadily, mostly because of you.
Thank you. That's lovely.
And also, it's good to know that I'm at the stage of my life where I don't beat myself up ridiculously about it. I just do my best.
Yeah.
And try and do a little bit better each time. My problem with the organic fruits and foods and things is they are in plastic in the supermarkets.
Right, yeah.
In the little shops, that's fine. And that's marvellous. And I do everything I can to shop in the little shops. And we are utterly, utterly blessed in that we are publishers. So even though I've lost more than 2/3 of my income, my husband's income is actually slightly better.
Hurrah!
Because people are buying more books.
Hurrah!
Which is, you know, sort of helpful, and I'm sort of making more of an effort because we have got that extra money to spend it on good food. And on good local gifts. This Christmas, what I bought was good local gifts from Chagford, from Morton Hampstead, from the farmers market in Okehampton. And it was a joy to do so. And you think, why haven't I done this before? So that's one good thing that has come out of this weird last year for me.
Yeah, hooray.
But there is a lot more that we all can do. And we don't do it out of sheer laziness. Because I like instant gratification. We all do. But we're trained into it now, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's got to be sold now. Take the medicine, it'll be all right. Take the vaccine, don't worry about it because there'll be no more COVID-19. But why was it here in the first place? What have we learned from it?
Well, you're going back to eating sparrows there. I mean, potentially. Yeah. I don't actually know. I didn't really stay on the path of that one.
Yeah.
But one of the stories is that
eating of the wrong things. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Eating of things that we should be considering to be wild, basically.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And it's all very complex, but no, it's not. It's all absolutely simple, which is eat the best, cleanest food you can and know where it came from.
Yeah, and treat it with respect and love
and
don't enslave it and just, oh God.
Well, the only way we're going to stop the enslavement of animals is by cutting our population. And what's COVID-19 trying to do?
Cut our population. I'm not completely sure that's true, but I don't know enough about it. But I also, I don't agree. I don't think we need to cut our population. I think we need to change our expectations.
Yes.
And learn some respect, frankly. And, you know, look at in the West, typically, you know, we are fat, lazy bastards. Yeah. And we eat too much of the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
And treat it with no respect, and so it doesn't do us any good. You know, there's no, if you look at conventional farming versus organic farming, there is, in the food that conventional farming creates, there's so much less of what's good for you in it that you probably have to eat more of it to get the good things that we need.
Yeah.
And I've completely lost my thread now. But
no, we're bit pottering along on the same thing. I mean, I will own up to being eating far too much chocolate over Christmas and that kind of thing. Don't eat well enough, but I eat so much better than the average person who isn't, oh God, it sounds so patronising, isn't awake to this and isn't being trained to honour the planet or to understand things. And I think to train all of us, to teach all of us about respect for the planet is such a huge job that I'm wondering. I mean, a lot of people say that the death toll isn't that high and all that kind of thing, but I don't know about that. But I do think this is a warning.
There's a little part of me that just smiled inside when you said there's something needs to teach us all this lesson. And to me, that's what coronavirus is.
Yeah, exactly.
That is our planet attempting to teach us
this
lesson.
Yes, absolutely. It's a wake up.
Yeah.
You are a mess.
Yeah. And oh, I think, is it Satish Kumar?
Yes.
We need to live simply so that others may simply live.
Yes.
And that one of the kind of, I don't know, I see it as a sickness. The sickness of our culture is not just the instant gratification, but the constant need to be distracted.
Yes.
And that we are distracted by our addiction to stuff.
Mm.
And I guess one of the good things, I suppose, about the kind of technological takeover is that it appears to be coming with another addiction, perhaps, but to less stuff or maybe smaller stuff or something. I'm not quite sure.
I don't know. It's all yes and.
Yeah.
Because some of it's better because of the last year and some of it's a lot worse because of the last year. Mm. Over Christmas, I bought the first new pair of boots I've bought in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have no waterproof boots and the charity shops aren't open.
Yes. Yeah.
So I bought a pair of boots online.
Yeah.
And they're marvellous. They're waterproof. I hope they'll last me for the rest of my life. And they're plastic. Because I wouldn't buy leather. I only buy old leather now.
Mm.
I'll still buy leather, but I'll buy leather that's already...
Second-hand leather. Yeah.
Second-hand leather. Even though I am a carnivore. Or an omnivore, but I try to eat from the local butcher, from sustainable, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But it was really interesting to note, oh my God, I'm buying a new pair of boots. Because actually, this last year, I've walked around in leaky boots and taken them off and dried them and changed my socks. And eventually I got to the point of thinking, well, maybe you could have a pair of new boots, one pair of new boots. It's all right, one pair in a year.
And isn't it devastating that your boots, you can't take your boots to a cobbler because there isn't one and they can't be fixed because they've been created in such a way that means they can't freaking be fixed.
Yes, I've had one pair of them fixed 4 times, but they've got to the stage now where
I can't even think of a word for it, is that it is only 4 generations. Since we would have reasonably expected to have owned no more than, say, 2 pairs of boots in the entirety of our adult life.
Yes.
And potentially to have owned 1 or 2, like, Sunday suits, as it were, in the entirety of our adult life.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, my mum was a kid, I guess. She was born in 1940.
Mm.
So... it's almost entirely during only her lifetime that our expectations of how much stuff and how often should that stuff be changed has been so radically transformed.
Yeah. Well, my life in television, you wore a different outfit every day.
Yeah.
I cycled them around in a 3-week cycle, but I was always going to buy more stuff. Tons of stuff in the wardrobe. This last year... I've worn pretty much the same outfits, the same 2 years. They just washed them, put them back on, washed them, put them back on. And when I do Zoom things, I have to go, hang on, what was I wearing last time? Bet it was this. I better put a different the next car or something like that.
I've really noticed with inside of myself that I used to go, oh, oops, I bet I was wearing the same thing because I wear the same thing.
Mm.
All the time, pretty much. Sort of variations on a theme of pretty much the same thing. And... actually have got to the place now where it's like, good, because the more you and I and anyone else that's doing it is just consistently wearing pretty much the same thing, the more we're encouraging other people to do the same.
Yeah.
And our clothing's negative impact on the planet is actually even more in how often we wash it than it is in how often we change it.
We should be. You have to put stuff to gather up the fluff and all that. Probably shouldn't wash it as much. But then you get into beating yourself up, and you can only do a little change each time and keep moving with it. I don't wash things as much as I used to.
Good, well done.
A little more smelly than I used to be.
Well, you know, then you get
back down to the... And I bath far too much.
Do you?
Yeah.
Baths are nice, but yeah, I don't do it every day.
This last year, my mother was utterly shocked at this, but I thought it was really good sense. A few years ago, I gave an old sweatshirt to the cat in the cat box.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cat's gone now. And the cat box was still in Lion's office. And I picked up the sweatshirt and looked at it and thought, all it needs is a small darn. So I darned it, washed it, and I'm wearing it. I took the cat's sweatshirt back.
I love it. But just to be really fucking holier than thou, and I'm, you know, I'm so not judging you, but this, it's an opportunity just to point out another weirdness in our culture, is that if we were wearing natural materials, we wouldn't stink. And so we wouldn't have to wash either ourselves or our clothes nearly as often.
Yeah.
And it, you know, really, 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 really make it a thing. Sniff your armpits.
Yeah.
Sniff your armpits when you've been wearing a sweatshirt, and then sniff your armpits when you've been wearing a woolly jumper.
Yeah.
You will be amazed. And likewise, the armpit of the sweatshirt and the armpit of the woolly jumper.
Yeah.
It just doesn't stink.
No. No, I have noticed that as well. And I don't soak myself in the bath. I just lie in the bath and meditate. So I just allow it to soak off if necessary. If I am particularly stinky, might do my underarms, but I'm a really grubby person. But I don't smell the way I used to. And because, when you're older, you don't smell as much. And B, I wear more natural clothing.
Mm.
I don't have to wear the pretty posh stuff. Oh, God, I grew up with crimpline. Have you ever heard of crimpline?
I have heard of crimpline. I'm sure I know vaguely what it is, but tell me what it is.
Well, it's a sort of nylon, which I've got some books by a lady called Mary Stewart, which I was
reading. I remember Mary Stewart.
Exciting, and her heroine would take off her crimpline dress and just put it over a chair and put it on the very next day again because it would never smell. We probably lost the thread then because my...
No, I'm on it. Crimpline.
Oh, crimpline, yeah. And it was just this, it didn't absorb anything.
What's it made out of?
Oh, nylon.
Wow. That's not what I thought I knew about crimpline.
I'm pretty sure it's nylon. But it never crushed, and it was incredibly useful. And you just wore it and wore it. I had one dress in crimpline, and it was extraordinary because you could go anywhere, and it just never crushed itself.
Wow.
But it didn't stink. In those days I was on so many antiperspirants, you couldn't really tell. Did stink.
Yeah. Okay, fair.
You know, but it's probably lying at the bottom of some landfill somewhere now. Not having done anything. Oh, God, yes, we all stank at school. Mainly because we had all these nylon shirts that we had to wear. My dad had nylon shirts, and I had nylon shirts to wear to school. They never stank, but I did.
Yeah, I once wore a nylon shirt, and I electric shocked everyone I touched.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah, awful. And got a spark out of a door handle.
Oh, I got in the newspaper once when I was at Radio WM because I used to spark all the equipment because I was the first one in the morning.
Oh, well.
If I'd known it was the non-natural fibres, I would have changed my lifestyle. What I did was stop wearing a bra, and that worked. But that, of course,
really? That's hilarious.
I know. We thought it was the metal or something.
Yeah,
we don't
know
what it was.
Wiring yourself up to the mains.
But the bra was nylon, so.
Yeah.
So much of stuff we just dove into because we thought, oh, this is simpler, this is easier. But the cost.
Well, exactly. And you know, I think it's really important to be clear that I probably sound, firstly, like the most insane yogurt weaving hippie ever, who's clearly just really ruthless and always has been. But also...
Note.
Yes, must learn to weave yogurt. That I so completely understand, apart from anything else, because although I am a few years younger than you, I was actually there, that nobody ever meant this to fuck over our planet. That was never, ever anyone's intention.
No.
But now that we know that it is, we have to stop.
Yes.
We have to.
Yes.
And, you know, I can actually consider myself incredibly fortunate that the circumstances of being a mother, having a child who got really sick, and having a very, you know, strange body myself. There's a massive list of foodstuffs I can't eat, or I get really ill. That it's easy for me to sit here and go, well, I don't buy this, and I don't buy that, and I don't buy this.
Because you can't.
Because there are so many things that I can't buy, and I have to know if it's in the ingredients, and I have to know where they came from, because my kid's life depended on it, and because now, you know, I get, for example, if I eat a member of the nightshade family, the pain in my body is so intense, I will cry. Oh, does that mean we have to stop?
Well, we should stop. It's 35 minutes and that's the telephone. Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's time to go.
It's time to go. We'll see you again next week. Thank you so much for listening. I mean, that didn't come to any particular conclusion, but I think it was fascinating.
Well, just me making sure that people understand that I'm not judging anyone, including our culture, for not being as ruthless. And I understand that my lifestyle has... No. My life's events has made me this way, but if I can do it, so can you.
Well, if I hadn't had cancer, I probably wouldn't have been as careful about my diet as I am now. So the curse becomes a blessing.
Always.